Now for this sermon, our pastor, Mr. Steve Buchanan.
Thank you, Mr. Horchak. The events of 20 years ago today helped frame the first part of the 21st century. Whenever I say 21st century, I think, wow, how quickly that came upon us. That time in which we thought that there would be so many different things happening in life, like the Jetsons flying around in flying cars and wearing strange costumes and different clothing. But I would suspect that everybody that is 5 years and older at 2001, September 11th, 2001, remembers exactly what they were doing and where they were when the attack came upon America and two planes hit the Twin Towers in New York City. And for me, I was getting ready for work. I was getting ready to take Lindsay to school. And we had turned on the news and we were watching this, and we'd heard some radio reports. That the first radio reports we heard in Tucson were from one of the music stations, and they said that they thought that there was a small plane that hit one of the Twin Towers and that sort of thing, and that sounded bad. And then it just, the news just kept getting more and more alarming. And finally we turned on the TV and saw the second tower get hit with a plane just before I took Lindsay off to school, which was, and then that whole day, the whole week, the whole month, and then everything after that was just an incredible time. And I bet, I think the most tumultuous event of my lifetime up until then was the time in which Kennedy was assassinated. And I remember exactly where I was. I was in fifth grade, and we were in our afternoon classes. We heard the word and came across the radio, and one teacher related to another. Finally came to our class, and we heard this horrible news. And then we were glued to the TV sets for that entire weekend. And I remember seeing in Lifetime Jack Ruby killing Oswald right on live TV. Just the most traumatic thing. I just couldn't believe it. It was just an incredible event. And then everything that has happened since that time, that defined our 1960s for us and everything after that. But then 9/11 came along 20 years ago and redefined the world in so many ways, and it's still redefining the world. And it led to a war that took place for 20 years, and finally we've recently had that, quote, officially ended with the most shameful exit from Afghanistan, you can imagine, which appears to have been riddled with ineptness, but the closer you look at it, it looks like a deliberate attempt. It's just amazing as to what has happened. I mean, nobody can be that bad in leadership positions. Nobody could be that bad, so it appears to be deliberate. I'm stepping out on a limb. I realize that. I'm making that statement. And it's kind of an indictment against our leadership. But the Bible makes a lot of those same kind of indictments, which we'll get into today, and doesn't identify individuals, obviously, but definitely shows that there are some things that are done deliberately, and it's unfortunate, but we have to face the facts, because now we still have, apparently, I hope it's on your prayer list, even now hundreds of Americans are stranded still. Most of them at the mercy of a ragtag collection of thugs that we couldn't defeat. The world's greatest superpower of all time, with all the military machinery and hardware, could not overcome this group for whatever reason. But in the wake of 9/11, America was galvanized into action. And there was, I mean, on the good side, I mean, you could see that people really loved their country, and they were very outraged over what apparently had happened to us as a nation, or what had been done to us as a nation. And there was a coalescing of people and groups and even politicians to be motivated to act on the country's behalf, which was very good. There was a lot of patriotism, more patriotism at that time than we've seen in recent memory. People were proud of their nation, proud of their country. And then this massive military force was mobilized and sent to attack, and You know, from everything that we had heard and seen at that time, it seemed to be justified, and people wondered, okay, should we go to war, and should we do this, should we do that? And, you know, as time goes on, history has a way of helping people revise their attitudes and revise exactly how you frame those events. And I think that's probably something that's going to go on for a while. And there are a lot of questions that were posed during the time of 9/11 that still remain. I don't know if we'll ever get down to the bottom of some of these great issues that have affected our country, even going back to my time when I was a kid, when John F. Kennedy was shot and killed, and still a lot of, I mean, you know, then you get into the fade into Twilight Zone music here, if somebody please, get into kind of the theories that abound regarding, get into the theories that abound during that, and some of them are quite serious. But fast forward 20 years, and the most significant event since that time is the COVID-19 outbreak and pandemic. I remember going back, I'm going to switch gears and go back to 9/11. I remember that at that time, people claimed that that attack was God's punishment on the United States of America. I'm talking about people that we would know. And I don't know, I think I pretty well knew the congregation here. I'm not sure that anybody held that opinion here, but I know that, you know, I mean, you get a group of thousands of people and you have something like that happen, somebody may come to that conclusion. I know people that came to that conclusion, that this was God's punishment on the people of the United States of America. Well, we're 20 years removed from that very traumatic event. We've all experienced another different kind of dramatic event that has affected our lives and proves to affect it still. So on this 9/11 memorial, I would like to outline some keys for you to keep in mind in evaluating these and future events. These two events are the two most significant events. I guess I'm stating my opinion. My opinion is that these two events are the most significant events of the 21st century. And there will be more to come as time goes on. There'll be more things that'll be significant that, you know, we can't even imagine. We certainly couldn't have imagined either of these two things, at least because, and I'll tell you, one of the reasons you couldn't imagine them is that you're all normal. You're all good people, and it's very hard to imagine the kind of evil that exists out there in the world. Even though we are a people that have been steeped and taught and realize that the Bible gives us a way forward to the future and helps us to understand the future, still, it is very difficult for us to imagine just the kind of evil that is out there in the hearts and the minds of men. And no, that's not the opening of The Shadow. I guess I never even heard The Shadow, but at least I knew that my dad did. It was a radio show, but what evil lurks in the hearts of men? Only the shadow knows. Remember that from the 1940s? Any of you? Are any of you old enough to remember that? Yes, okay, all right. Yeah, a few. I've lost most of the audience. You're about to leave, I know, but at any rate. 9/11 and COVID-19. Now, for those of you that are into numerology, if you take 9 plus 11, that equals 20, and the C in COVID in Roman numerals equals 100. Are you taking notes on this? No, that's all we go. But then there's an I, and there's a V. There's a V for 5 and an I for 10, and you add all up. I don't know what it adds up to, but it's not really important because it has no relevancy whatsoever. Point number one, the Bible outlines that the world's rulers are evil. Pretty simple point. The world's rulers are evil. Now, how can we substantiate that? How can we verify that that's true? But most of the time, we see the end result in Bible prophecy that the world's rulers are evil people. And if you'll turn to Daniel chapter 8, and we'll go to Daniel for a couple of a couple of the different chapters that verify that at the time of the end, the people that will be making the major decisions in life are absolutely filled with evil. They are so far away from God, so far away from God and his law. So Daniel 8 and verse 23 says that in the latter time of their kingdom, when transgressors have reached their fullness, we are coming to a time in which evil will grow and grow and grow. And Paul told Timothy that evil men would wax worse and worse, as it says in the King James Version. They would just become more and more evil as time goes on. And we are sitting in a place where we can witness that happening. Now, this time is yet future ahead of us. This time, this particular time, because it's pointing to a very specific time in prophecy. It says, a king shall arise, having fierce features, who understands sinister schemes. He'll be able to be diabolical. He'll be able to develop sinister things, really horrible things. His power shall be mighty, but not by his own power. He'll be guided by another force, the god of this world, as we read in many different places in the Bible. He shall destroy fearfully. He shall prosper and thrive. This guy, this leader, is going to be successful. And it's going to be an individual that has nobody oppose him. Now, that individual is not on the scene yet. He shall destroy the mighty and also the holy people. There are several indications in Bible prophecy that the holy people, God's people, will be attacked by this particular fearful and sinister individual. Through his cunning, he shall cause deceit to prosper under his rule. And he shall exalt himself in his heart, and he shall destroy many in their prosperity, and he shall even rise against the prince of princes. So, this individual is described elsewhere in the Bible. We'll see those who put it together. This is not the only time that it happens in Bible prophecy. But he will oppose Jesus Christ as his coming. We rehearsed the meaning of the Feast of Trumpets, the Day of Trumpets. Christ is going to return. He will overcome all kings, all kingdoms. And he's going to be, it says that this individual is going to rise up against the Prince of Princes, but he shall be broken without human means, so going to be overcome by God. Now, Daniel was told that this vision, and it's mixed in with another vision about sacrifices, the 2300 days sacrifice, which turns out to be not 2300 days, and this is not the time to explain this. It gets a little bit technical, but 2300 days narrows down to 1150 days in the timeline of leading up to Jesus Christ's return. But it talks about the evening and morning sacrifices, and again, a little bit technical, not going to go into it now. It's mentioned several places in Daniel that there apparently will be a time in the so-called Holy Land in which the sacrificial system will be instituted once again. That's not my purpose to go in. We could take an entire sermon and explain that. It does get to be somewhat technical, so if you're behind the eight ball on that one, there are lots of articles you can read and study on that. But much of this prophecy of chapter 8 in going back has to do with the time just ahead of Daniel, several hundred years ahead of the time that Daniel was living. And it focuses on Alexander the Great and the division of his kingdom into four separate kingdoms after his death. So for Daniel, it certainly was prophetic because it was future from the time that he was living in. Note in verse 15, it happened when I, Daniel, had seen the vision and was seeking the meaning that suddenly there stood before me one having the appearance of a man. And we know it wasn't a man. We know it was an angelic being that brought this prophecy or the understanding of this vision to him to help explain to him what all of this meant. So he came near where I stood, and when he came, I was afraid and fell on my face. And he said to me, understand, son of man, that the vision refers to the time of the end. So even Though, a lot of the prophecy of Daniel 8 focused just a couple of hundred years ahead of Daniel's time, the greater meaning was to be fulfilled at the time of the end. That is very clear, and it makes that very clear in several different instances. Now, as he was speaking with me, I was in a deep sleep with my face to the ground, but he touched me and stood me upright. And he said, "Look, I'm making known to you what shall happen in the latter time of the indignation, for at the appointed time the end shall be." And then he describes the rams which you saw having two horns. They are the kings of Media and Persia. That was the kingdom that Daniel was living in at the present time, because the Babylonians had overcome the Babylonians had been overcome by the kings of Media and Persia, the Persian Empire. Let's just say the Persian Empire had overcome the Babylonian Empire, and Daniel was still in his position as an advisor and helping now the kings of Persia. After this time, there would be another kingdom that would come up, and that is being described to him, the kingdom of Greece, noted in verse 21, and specifically in speaking of Alexander the Great. Again, a lot of history now for us, but basically it's pointing to the time of the end. So the last or end time leader or king that would arise on the scene when transgressors have reached a fullness would be a totally different individual. And if you'll turn back to chapter 7, I have to go back a little bit to understand some of the symbols and exactly what they mean, but they help us to understand and coordinate even the chapters of the book of Revelation, which, again, you know, I encourage you to read, study on your own, Daniel 7 and Revelation 13. We'll see how they coordinate here. First of all, let's begin in verse 8 of Daniel 7. We could go back to the first part of the chapter, but I'm not going to do that today. But again, another vision is given to Daniel, and in verse 8 he says, "I was considering the horns, and there was another horn, a little one, coming up among them." Now, these horns are explained elsewhere as governmental entities. And this other one, which is smaller than the rest of the horns that are mentioned in the beginning of the chapter, before whom three of the first horns were plucked up by the roots. And there in this horn were the eyes like the eyes of a man and a mouth speaking pompous words. Hold your place here, and let's go all the way back to the book of Revelation. All the way back, and you'll see some of the similar language, and with the understanding that this vision, the vision in Daniel 8, was intended mostly for the time of the end. The time of the end. Revelation chapter 13 and verse 11. In this sense, beast, horn, is relevant to governmental entities. And in Revelation 13 and verse 11, it says, "I saw another beast coming up out of the earth." Beast, we'll see in just a moment, refers to kings or kingdoms. "So I saw another beast or king or government coming up out of the earth, and this one had two horns, like a lamb, but it spoke like a dragon." So you know what it represents, the great dragon. It represents the devil. It looks like Jesus Christ. It looks like it should be Jesus Christ, but it isn't. It's false. "And he exercises all the authority of the first beast in his presence and causes the earth and those who dwell in it to worship the first beast whose deadly wound was healed." Let's go back, hold your place there in Revelation, and let's go back to the book of Daniel, chapter 7, and Daniel 7 and in verse 13. Daniel, in this particular vision, says, "I was watching in the night visions, And behold, one like the Son of Man, coming with the clouds of heaven. He came to the Ancient of Days, and they brought him near before him. Then to him was given dominion and glory and a kingdom, that all peoples and nations and languages should serve him. His dominion is an everlasting dominion which shall not pass away, and his kingdom the one which shall not be destroyed. When you read through these prophecies in Daniel 7 and Daniel 13, Revelation 13, they are terrifying. They're absolutely terrifying, but in the midst of it, you find gems like this, where you find that to end all of this nuttiness of man's rule, man's division, man's hatred inspired by Satan the devil, Jesus Christ is coming back, as we rehearsed last week on the Day of Trumpets. I mentioned in earlier sermons that if you go back to the time when many of us came into the Church of God, not very many people were ever talking about Bible prophecy and the fulfillment of Bible prophecy and understanding what that is. And you know that you'll be going to the Feast of Tabernacles in the not too distant future, in the next few weeks, and you're going to be rehearsing the beginning of God's intervention on this earth. God has always been here, but he announces his intent to take over the kingdoms of man and to set up his son Jesus Christ as the ruler of this earth for 1,000 years. And because the Church of God, and you could say the community of the Church of God, has always kept those days, the spring holy days, the fall holy days, we are ably and apt to look forward and anticipate that righteous kingdom. In all prophecy, the end result, I love this when Mr. Armstrong said it the first time, we win. In the end, he said, we win. And that's the thing to keep in mind in a lot of these prophecies, which are absolutely horrifying when you understand them in their totality. Now, when you first begin to look at it, it is confusing because you really have to be focused. You really have to coordinate some of these chapters in Bible prophecy. And you also have to understand some of the rules for understanding Bible prophecies. One which we'll cover today a little bit later in the message is that prophecy can jump in and out of time sequence, can be from ancient to future. It can be from the present time, and then all of a sudden, boom, you're into the time in which Jesus Christ is ruling on this earth. You just have to understand the context and how that is organized. So verses 13 through 14 remind us very much of Revelation 19, in which, and I'm not going to go there, Revelation 19, where the announcement is made that Jesus Christ is inheriting all the kingdoms of this earth, and that he's going to come back to this earth, and he's going to take care of the most evil leaders of all that are mentioned, which we have grown accustomed to simply calling the beast and the false prophet. And they are mentioned in these books of Daniel as well as Revelation 13. In verse 17 of Daniel 7, it says, those great beasts, which are four kings which arise out of the earth. And in labeling that, again, many articles that you can research and look at, talks about the four ruling kingdoms that the Bible specifies. Now, there are others as well. But Babylon, Persia, Greece, and the final one, the Roman Empire. Revelation 13, to complicate things a little bit more, speaks exclusively of this Roman Empire, which arises through history. And even the historians call it what? The Holy Roman empire, and they can look to individuals who have been a part of this church and state alliance, and you know all of these things. But there will be one final one that comes upon the world scene. Now, and in each of the cases that you could look at in the various resurrections of the Holy Roman Empire, you'll see people who are pretty evil themselves. We look to the, you know, we go back to all of them, Charles the Great, just all the ones who have been appointed, who were appointed kings of the Holy Roman Empire, and it's going to come upon the scene at some point in the future. These individuals are described in the Bible as being so evil. Notice that, again, this in verse 25 of Daniel 7, it says of this end-time leader, he shall speak pompous words against the Most High. He'll speak out against God, speak out against his throne, and shall persecute the saints of the Most High, which we coordinate fairly easily with Revelation 12 or the latter parts of Revelation 12, and shall intend to change times and law. The saints shall be given into his hand for a time, times, and half a time, 3.5 years. But eventually, again, we come back to that good news, verse 27, the kingdom and the dominion and the greatness and the kingdoms under the whole earth shall be given to the people, the saints of the Most High, which we easily coordinate with Revelation 20 and verse 6, where those saints will rule with Jesus Christ for 1,000 years as Jesus returns. Now, when you read of this, admittedly, it takes time and personal study to go through these and to understand what it is exactly speaking about, and it can be somewhat complex. But you see the absolute evil in these individuals who want to wipe out a whole group of people, the saints. And in Revelation 13, it says that this beast, this final beast on the earth, will make war with the saints. Will make war with the saints, which is, by the way, you. Not something that anyone would look forward to in their right mind. Now, where did this evil originate? When you go back to Genesis, you can find that it began at the Tower of Babel with man's rejection of God. And anything that involves the rejection of God and his law becomes evil. You know that we see this evil all throughout history. We see it in the 19th and 20th centuries with the rise of the thought of man and how he would develop his various isms. And he would deny the Creator. He would come up with all of these theories and ideas about man's creation, or not creation, but his evolution. And we could see how this evil develops as you trace it through the 19th and 20th centuries. The denial of God equals evil. I mean, that is a very general way of putting it. But going back even before that, we can go to the Garden of Eden and see that evil originated with the devil's interference with Eve and then Adam. I think it's easy to see that these leaders in the future are evil and motivated by the devil, but what about now? What about in today's world? For a person like you who is rational and have lived in the most blessed nation of all, and I would also include all of the English-speaking peoples of the globe, what incredible bounty we have all shared. And we had a, not that other nations haven't had some, you know, greatness themselves, and in times of peace have realized that greatness and those blessings, many of the nations of Europe. But specifically, these English-speaking peoples of the globe have shared such an incredible heritage, and all of them trace their foundation of their society back to, well, you could say the Magna Carta or the Constitution of the United States, But what is all of that really based on? It is based on this book that you have sitting on your laps. There's no denying that. Nobody denies that. I mean, I think of some of the incredible things that have been pointed out by our ministry here, you know, going back to the fact that with the introduction of the Bible and the English-speaking language, the English-speaking peoples of the world disseminating this, that in times in which in London, for instance, before and after the Bible was introduced and began to be read and studied, it was read and studied in high schools and colleges. It was the text of all texts to be understood. Now, that's something that most of us don't really associate with because it hasn't been that much, except if we were growing up and apart from the church, we went to Sunday school, the Bible was introduced to us, but it was still introduced to us. And I don't know that many people necessarily associate the foundation of this nation with the Bible. And I know that, of course, mainstream Christianity is so imperfect, as we know. But in the 19th century, people from other nations came to this and marveled that the churches were preaching from the Bible. And whether they were incorrect or not, you still come to the conclusion that it changed people's lives for the better. Now, the world has gotten away from that. There is no doubt about that. Turn to Micah chapter 3. Micah chapter 3. All of these minor prophets are hard to find except for the one that you're not looking for, right? When you go through them, they're short. But in Micah chapter 3, we find out where the real responsibility for the problems of society lay at first. Now, you're excluded from this because you've been called and you understand the Bible and you read it, so it obviously, you're kind of excluded from this. But when I read through Bible prophecy, I find that these are the people that are most culpable. Okay? These are the ones, in other words, whether they're elected leaders or not, if they have been able to benefit by the bounty that has been created by the understanding of God's Word, which is the foundation of our Constitution, and really, when you get down to it, the foundation of the English-speaking peoples of the world, you find that the people who are held most culpable by God are the individuals that ascend to leadership positions, whether they're elected or not. And this is what God says about them. Micah 3 and verse 1. Hear now, O heads of Jacob. Name was changed to Israel. He passed it on to his son Joseph through Joseph's sons Ephraim and Manasseh. And when you read through Bible prophecy, wow, they got the lion's share of all of those blessings that originally had been given to Abraham. So here now, and these are prophetic books, God is speaking now directly to the heads of Israel, our English-speaking peoples, in other words. You rulers of the house of Israel, is it not for you to know justice? Well, are they culpable? Yes, even if they're kind of ignorant of God, because when they go to office, they put their hand on the Bible, on a Bible. And the president puts his hand on the Bible when he's sworn into office, on a Bible. You would think that this would be important to understand, right? So these are the ones that God holds responsible. Now, even if they are ignorant, they have to be taught and they'll have to be approached. But is it not for you to know justice? In any nation, and especially in the nation that we live in, there is a division of powers, right? And it sort of it sort of mimics the instruction that God gave to ancient Israel, that there would be judges in the land of Israel, that there would be individuals that could go to. There would be a division of power, so to speak. You who hate good and love evil. Not just speaking of all the people, speaking specifically to leaders. Not going to apply, of course, people can love evil too, right? Citizens. Who strip the skin from my people and flesh from their bones. Metaphorically, probably, who also eat the flesh of my people and flay their skin from them, break their bones, chop them in pieces like meat for the cauldron, like flesh in the cauldron. What's it saying? It's that here are people in leadership positions that don't care for the ones that they are supposed to be caring for and governing. It's a responsibility. Now, you know that you can see that there are people that are really maybe in leadership positions that are not like this, right? There are some like that. You can tell they're genuine and that they do genuinely want to obey the law. They want to abide by the law. But this is not speaking about those individuals. It's speaking about the really, truly evil ones. Then they will cry to the Lord, but he will not hear them. He will hide his face from them at that time because they have been evil in their deeds. Yes, there is a time of punishment coming to the individuals who are leaders of our land and of our lands, and we can see that evil begin to come to the forefront now, where maybe we didn't see it so much in times past. So these are individuals who are indicted by God. Thus says the Lord concerning the prophets who make my people stray, who chant peace while they chew with their teeth, but who prepare war against him who puts nothing in their mouths. Therefore you shall have night without vision, you will have darkness without divination, the sun shall go down on the prophets, and the day shall be dark for them, so the seers shall be ashamed, and the diviners abashed. Indeed they shall all cover their lips, for there is no answer from God. But that's a dark time. When there's no ability to relate to right and wrong, and the individuals who are leading the nation are led astray. But the prophet says, I am full of power by the Spirit of God, of justice and might, to declare to Jacob his transgression and to Israel his sin. There is hope. There is hope that even those who are evil leaders, who disregard God, who disregard the Constitution, which we see happening rapidly, we see rapidly that happening in our land today. Because there's supposed to be a division of powers between the executive, the judicial, and the congressional branch, the legislative branches, and certain individuals are going above and beyond that. You know, I've often thought about the Constitution of the United States, which is based on the Bible, intentionally by the framers of the Constitution. And they wrote into that Constitution the very things of the law of God, that all men are created equal, and that they are endowed by their Creator. I mean, all of these words are very, very meaningful from that time. And I've often looked at the Constitution as kind of a hedge that would protect the nation, as long as it's obeyed. But with one executive order and mandate after another, if, you know, as those things begin to happen, that Constitution and the freedom of the individual goes by the wayside, because individuals begin to ascribe to themselves powers that they really shouldn't have. Now, this is not the only place in which leaders are indicted. Turn to Isaiah chapter 9. Isaiah 9 and verse 16. The question may come into your mind. So if the real responsibility initially is with the leadership of the nation, When does all of that warning to them come about? Well, that's a really good question. That is a really good question. That's something to look for on the horizon, that those individuals would be confronted. Because they are, whether they are elected or not, and I think a lot of times, as I think many people are beginning to see, a lot of times some of the, quote, leaders are not even individuals that are elected to a position of power and authority under a constitutional or democratic style of government. But in verse 16 of Isaiah 9, it says, "For the leaders of this people cause them to err." Cause them to err. And generally speaking, people do follow their leaders. And those who are led by them are destroyed. Therefore, the Lord will have no joy in their young men, nor have mercy on their fatherless and widows, for everyone is a hypocrite and evildoer, and every mouth speaks folly. An indictment on leadership. Leaders are people who can influence others. Okay? It doesn't have to be a king. It doesn't have to be a president. It doesn't have to be a member of Congress. It doesn't even have to be somebody that's elected to an office. But the leaders of this world that are behind the scenes have an intent that is totally different than the normal person on the street. I was really happy to read a most recent article in Beyond Today written about the New World Order. I'd wondered if anybody actually even understood that. But Darris McNeely has an excellent article in the latest Beyond Today, and he talks about some of the individuals that, you know, a lot of us have never even heard of, or at least one individual, he mentions him. I'm not going to mention that individual in the message today, but you can read the article. I would certainly encourage you to do so if you haven't done so already. But he sees the influence of this particular leader that is mentioned and the evil intent. And that is something that has happened. Now, through the pandemic of 2020-2021, there have been a lot of shortages that were created in the supply chains, as you know. And one of those shortages for a period of time was toilet paper, of all things. You know, people were hoarding it, you know, in anticipation of there not being any left at one time. But that's just one of the things that supply chains, because of the disruption of shipping and shipping lanes and everything, a lot of things were just held up. Now it seems like, boy, they're beginning to catch up, because on our way back from El Paso several weeks ago, traffic was halted just east of here on Interstate 10. And because there was an accident, the trucks were just backed up. It looked like there were like, I'm sure it wasn't a case, but it looked like there were 10 times the number of trucks as there were cars. There were so many of them backed up for 5 miles. It was incredible to see that. But so it seems though that shipping and stuff is caught back up. But there were supply shortages, right? Seeing things, and there still are in some business. One of the things that is in really short supply today are conspiracy theories. Because the former conspiracy theories are beginning to come true. So there's none left. But Mr. McNeely makes the point of some of these organizations that are behind the scenes that have been working diligently to upset the apple cart of world power. Now, I don't care how old you are. The United States has been the top dog for as long as you have lived, and still is. And years ago, at the beginning of the Gulf War of the 21st century, there was a massive movement of arms, men, and materiel to a warlike position in the Middle East. Now, I think a lot of people have come to the conclusion that all of that was probably unnecessary to solve whatever problem there was. And looking back, there were just trillions and trillions of dollars that, you know, especially with this debacle of the retreat from Afghanistan, the stranding of Americans there, just, and the leaving of equipment and making this ragtag group of Taliban leaders basically the 29th or 30th most powerful armed force in the world, because gave them all this high-tech equipment and planes and helicopters and so on and so forth. It really is a shame. That appears to be deliberate, though. Mr. McNeely makes the point, I think a very nice way, that there are the powers that be that have wanted to remove the United States' influence, and for many, many years. And that seems to be coming about. Now, China took note of what was happening in the early part of the century. And as we know, a lot of our manufacturing base moved to China, and they became a manufacturing power. But they've also become a very, very powerful military and economic power as well, as a nation. And years ago, I mean, they were still in the horse and buggy age, just after World War II. But look how things have changed. A lot of people think that that has been somewhat of a deliberate movement as well. But the Chinese saw and copied what the United States have done, and they have become very, very powerful. We saw the transformation and we witnessed the transfer of wealth and waging war. And yet, even after the impact on the Twin Towers and the nation going to war, the United States of America has been so blessed by God that it was resilient throughout all of that time. And still, up until, I believe, the time in which we are living now, has still maintained its power over the rest of the world. And there are individuals that are not wanting the United States to continue in that direction. Second point today, where do we go from here and where should we look? The first point, simple. The rulers of this world are evil, and you need to understand that, because evil people are taking us to this place where Jesus Christ has to return. That's a fundamental, easy to understand concept of Bible prophecy. Things are not going to remain the way they are today, and we better understand it and be ready for it. Jeremiah 50 and verse 1. Where can we go from this? This, now, thankfully, we have a beautiful hall. You'd be traveling throughout this beautiful country, some of you, to celebrate and anticipate God's coming kingdom. But you can see where this is headed if you're a serious Bible student. I know you don't want to see it. I don't want to see it either, believe me. But in Jeremiah 50, it says, "The word that the Lord spoke against Babylon and against the land of Chaldeans by Jeremiah the prophet. Declare among the nations, proclaim and set up a standard. Proclaim, do not conceal it. Say, Babylon is taken, Bel is shamed, Merodach is broken in pieces, her idols are humiliated, her images are broken in pieces. For out of the north, a nation which comes against her, which shall make her land desolate, and no one shall dwell therein, they shall move, they shall depart, both man and beast." Now that's speaking of the ancient destruction of Babylon. Ancient times, going back to the 500s B.C., But then in verse 4 it says, "In those days and in that time, says the Lord, the children of Israel shall come, they and the children of Judah together." Now that did not happen historically, because Israel, Jacob, Ephraim, Manasseh, the 10 tribes, went into captivity separate from the captivity of the people of Judah. They were separated by about 125 years. So you can see, as I mentioned earlier, that prophecy often flips from verse to verse, end time to historical fulfillment. But this is definitely an end time fulfillment. The children of Judah and Israel shall come out of captivity together, which means that they're going to go into captivity together at some point in the future. and they shall seek the Lord their God. End of verse 4. They shall ask the way to Zion. Zion is a synonym for God's kingdom, the church, kingdom of God, and they will ask for the way to that, and so that is good. But going on in verse 6, it says, my people have been lost sheep. Their shepherds have led them astray. The people of Israel, of Jacob, Joseph, Ephraim, and Manasseh. When I think of them and I think of this passage, I think of John 3, where Jesus said, for God so loved the world. God loves the world, the people, the lost sheep. Do you? Do you love the people of the world, or do you paint them with the wide prophetic brush of disobedience and sin? I always think of the saying, it's not found in the Bible, but for God, there go I. You know, when I see somebody that doesn't know the truth, that was me at one time. Going on in verse 6, they have turned them away on the mountains. They have gone from mountain to hill. They have forgotten their resting place. They have forgotten the background of God. Now, imperfect as it was, the nation was settled on a foundation of God and the Ten Commandments. Imperfect. We all agree on that, right? They didn't have the entire truth. No, they didn't. But there was a time in which, even on the wrong day, God was preached and the Bible was preached. And that's better than nothing. Now, I'm not saying that that's the end result, obviously. But Bible prophecy indicates the leaders of the people first. So with this in place, what chance do the people of God have? Because it says in verse 17 that Israel's like scattered sheep. The lions have driven away. First the king of Assyria devoured him. Now at the last, this Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, has broken his bones. What chance do they have? Verse 33. Thus says the Lord of hosts, the children of Israel were oppressed along with the children of Judah. All who took them captive had been held fast. They have refused to let them go. So we look for that coming upon the scene. There comes a time, and I'm going to give you another chapter where you can read this together, when these two groups of people are judged together, when in ancient history they were judged separately. But Hosea 12, first few verses of that chapter, is one that you can look up as well. Now, let's turn to where this all has to go eventually. In order for Jesus Christ to return to earth, and in order for God to deal with man righteously, we find a principle that is found in several places, but I think one that is a favorite of the people of God is Ezekiel 33. This is where this must go for both leaders and people together. Ezekiel chapter 33, beginning in verse 1. Now, as I mentioned, on 9/11, 2001, and shortly thereafter, I heard people talking about how God was punishing the modern people of Israel, or the United States of America, with this attack. And I thought, wow. I also heard people talk about the demise of America and God removing his blessings and so on and so forth. But in the last 20 years, we've just gotten even more prosperous despite the fact that, you know, we're up and beyond our eyeballs in debt as a nation and so on and so forth, through stupidity, through bad mistakes, and through evil people when you get down to it. But Ezekiel says, again, the word of the Lord came to me, saying, son of man, speak to the children of your people and say to them, when I bring a sword upon the land and the people of the land take a man from their territory and make him their watchman, when he sees the sword come upon the land, and if he blows the trumpet and warns the people, Then whoever hears the sound of the trumpet and does not take warning, if the sword comes and takes him away, his blood shall be on his own head. And go through the entire chapter, brethren. This principle of warning is something that God does not deviate from. Now, maybe some think that our nation and its people have been warned. I'm not in that camp. But if you're in that camp, okay, fine. I don't know, maybe we can find some middle ground on that. But as big as our message was in the past, it's going now on 40 years in which a loud, thundering message was over the radio waves and TV waves. And now we're in a totally different generation, and Jesus Christ, you'll note, has not returned yet to this earth. I really feel very strongly that our people have been led astray. Are they culpable, responsible? Sure, everybody has to do right and wrong, right? But they're being led astray in very subtle ways by evil people. And I believe you love God's purpose and His calling, and you see potential in that calling. In Luke chapter 9, in verse 51, Luke 9 and verse 51, Jesus was making his way to Jerusalem, and they had to pass through an area, and it says in verse 51, as they're going through Samaria, it came to pass when the time had come for him to be received up that he steadfastly set his face to go to Jerusalem. He was on a mission. His end result was Jerusalem. His end was Jerusalem, and that's where he was going. And he sent messengers before his face, and they went and entered the village of the Samaritans to prepare for him. Maybe stop over. But they did not receive him because his face was set for the journey of Jerusalem. Samaria wasn't the end destination. Jerusalem was. And when his disciples, James and John, saw this, you know, the refusal to accommodate Jesus on his journey, they said to him, Lord, do you want us to command fire to come down from heaven and consume them just as Elijah did? But he turned and rebuked them and said, you don't know what manner of spirit you are of. For the Son of Man did not come to destroy men's lives, but to save them. It's really kind of hard to work with people that you've burnt to a crisp. It's kind of a non-issue then. You can't work with them, help them to change or understand. And yet the disciples at that time would learn that, you know, God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son for them. 20 years ago, I saw the need for some of our people to develop that attitude. Godly love for those that had not yet been called, and Christ said that the fields are white with harvest. The defining events of the 20th century, in my view, and it's just my opinion, have been the anniversary of 9/11. And whatever stories remain to be told about that time and whatever is finally unearthed as to the cause of that, it may be really shocking for us, but it has changed our lives in many, many ways. The TSA and intrusion and travel, Homeland Security, and everything else that was developed at that particular time. But whatever happens in the immediate future, even beyond hopefully this COVID-19 thing, God's message must be proclaimed in order for God to be honorable, just, and right, and people need to learn and understand. I don't think that's happened yet, as it must fully be. May all of us be a part of that solution and help for mankind.